Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Salita, the host of Say Your Piece radio show here on Blog Talk Radio. Join me and Brian for informative show about life, love, politics, and culture.
All right, you guys, I want to say good evening to everyone. I'm hoping everyone has had a great week. Brian, are you there?
I'm here.
Good
How
afternoon.
How are you today?
Good
this evening?
I keep saying good afternoon because I don't know why. 10 o'clock at night. While we wait for our guests to call in, tonight we're going to be discussing the Matthew Moore case out of Clinton, Louisiana. Brian, before we get started with that, you have anything you want to talk about real quick?
I would just want to add, if I could, that it's things that are going on, and we just wonder which one. But I have in my mind that we just got to keep exposing this. If we don't, then we're gonna be doomed if we don't keep fighting. You know, some people, you know, you need to keep going and keep happening. Eventually, it's gonna have to give because so many of these things that are happening with us is. It's time it stops. But if we don't fight, we just fall into the system, then we move forward. Our babies can never look forward to it.
You keep going in and out.
How about that? Is it better?
I don't know, but you keep going in and out, so we're not getting your whole conversation.
Okay, hopefully. Hold on. That ain't better?
Yeah. 225?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hi, this is Catherine.
Hi,
Connor.
How are you tonight?
Pretty good.
How you doing, Connor?
How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing fine, doing fine.
That's good. Y'all enjoying this weather?
Oh, yeah,
yes,
pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Ooh,
that coolness, yeah,
yes.
You it's guys, this is Catherine Connors. This is the mother of Matthew Moore. And Ms. Connors, we went over your story and what you've been through, and now you're dealing with it with your son. It's amazing, huh?
Yes, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Now he goes to court on the 23rd, right?
That's right, Tuesday for sentencing.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he hasn't made it back yet.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Basically kind of tell us the story. You can go ahead and tell us the story about how this started and where you're at now.
Oh, well, this started back in 2009, believe it or not. Matthew was a student worker at his school, as he had been for the previous 2 years. And what happened was the assistant principal, Deborah Collins Anderson, claimed she saw him walking on a hall behind her, and she turned around and saw his private part sticking over his shorts, and he had an erection. And she asked him, did I see your private part or something like that? And he said, no, ma'am. And then she claimed, you know, he never stopped walking, and that later on he came back and apologized to her. But he tells a different story, and he said she asked him, did he expose himself? And he said, no, ma'am. And, well, she called him. She said, come here, Matthew. Did you expose yourself? And he said, no, ma'am. And then she said, I believe you did. And he said, no, ma'am, I didn't. And, you know, they start trading off words like that. And then he said that she looked like at his crouch area, and she looked at the ceiling and said, you may leave. So he left and went on the outside. And a few minutes later, she came out to where he was and was asking him, what time is Rod Lee comes? Why so late? And she asked, first off, she asked him, she said, Mr. Moore, are you still here? Or something like that. And he said, yes, ma'am. And then she says, why so late? And he told her that I probably would be late picking him up. And then I was asking him what time does his ride come and all this kind of thing. And then he said she asked him where the janitor was, Mr. Green, or the maintenance person. He, like, cuts grass or whatever. And he thought that she was just trying to make small talk with him. And because he said that to get to where he was, she had to pass Mr. Green on the tractor. He was out there on the tractor. And then she just turned and went back into the building. And so, but 4 days later, she called and wanted me to meet with her about it. She'd asked me, did he tell me what happened? And I told her, no. But he really didn't tell me the full story. He just said that Ms. Anderson was acting funny that day, and what he said was Ms. Anderson was tripping. And I said, ask him, did he want to talk about it? He said, no. He said, I can't talk about it right now. I just can't talk about it. But later on, he told me what had happened, and he said the reason why he couldn't talk about it, he couldn't believe it, that she accused him of such a thing. And he said the only thing that he had on him was he worked with the janitor, so he had, like, his sanitizer on him, and he had said he had his garbage bags around his neck, and he was really going to put up these items before he checked out. He was on his way out when she called it back. But anyway, when I met with her, she told me that she was walking on a hall. She turned around and saw him walking behind her. Even though he never stopped, she saw his private area sticking over his shorts. He had an erection. And so I told her I just found that hard to believe. And she said, well, I saw him on every hall. I said, you saw him on every hall? She says, yes. And I said, you didn't say anything to him? She says, oh, yes, I asked him if he was modeling for me. And I said, oh, no, that's an inappropriate statement for someone you claim is exposing themselves. And then she said, well, Miss Connie, he could have been on drugs. He could have been masturbating. You know that's how serial killer Derek Todd Lee started. I said, oh, no, I don't want to hear that. And I said, no, I don't want to hear that. I said, you have cameras up in here. Let me look at what you have on camera. I said, because I'm not believing any of this here. I said, this is just too far out. And then she says, well, I'm going to recommend that he be moved to another work site. And I was telling her that I still didn't agree with what she was saying, and I would still like to see the cameras. And so that's when she had the principal in there, I guess, to some, you know, for support or whatever. And he says, well, the police need to be notified, and she shouldn't have to look at him or something, like he was there. And I told him he wasn't there. Neither one of us was there. And so that's why I would like to see the cameras. And she says, well, I'm just going to recommend. And I told him, I said, you have assaulted two students. Who can you talk about? And so she was saying, well, I'm just going to recommend that he be moved to another work site. And so I told Matthew, I said, come on, Matthew, let's go. So we left, And I went to the school board then to talk to his project manager. And so we went there. The project manager wasn't in. I left several messages, and nobody called me back. So the next day I talked with the superintendent. And so the superintendent told me that he had already been notified of what they, you know, what Miss Anderson said happened. And I told him, that's totally out of character for my son. I said, my son have worked at this school during the summer since he was 15. He has to take a class each time he works. And I said, we have never had anything like, you know, never had any kind of bad reports on him or anything. And he's going to be on the, get on the threshold of graduation to expose his genitals to a woman in my age group, the most militant person in the school. I said, no, I'm not believing that. And I said, then she tells me that she followed him, went outside, and commenced to talking to him again outside after she said she saw all this, and she waits 4 days to report this. And I said, I told her, now I'm asking you, I want to see the cameras. Well, he said, Miss Connor, she is a teacher. I say, so what? I said, we have a lot of criminal teachers in our schools today. And I said, I would just like to see if this is what she's saying about my son. I would like to see the cameras. I said, you got cameras on the outside. You got cameras all along that hall, what she's talking about. And he says, well, Miss Connor, I would like to know that myself, or I would like to see that myself, or something. He wanted to know why she followed him outside and why she didn't report it. And so I guess it seemed like it just seemed like seconds after I hung up the phone from talking to him, she called me, and she was mad as a hatter. I'm pressing charges. You can get counseling for him, but I'm pressing charges. And I don't know what I was just so shocked at her attitude. And she hung the phone up on me, just slammed the phone down. Well, the next thing I know, some days had passed, and so I called the police station to find out, did I need to turn him in or whatever. So the policeman told me, said he didn't have anything, said she had, he said, ma'am, she wrote a statement, and she said, I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me, and her story sounds suspicious, and I don't even know if the DA is going to accept it. And he, he told me that, but let me just say I went there. And so he went in the back room to try to find the statement that, because he had taken the statement. He was the one that wrote the statement. And he said, I had it right here. He said, unless they've taken it and did something funny with it over there, and like taking it over to Clinton. And that's where the DA's office is. He said, I had it right here because I was the one that wrote it up. And I asked her, what did she want to do? And she said, well, I'll wait and see what the school board wants to do. And he said, I just hunched my shoulders up like, oh, well. And he said, but her statement just didn't add up. What she was saying didn't add up.
Okay, that was the officer? Or
yeah.
That was the officer.
Yeah, the officer told me that. Okay, this was June 17. I never will forget it because I asked him, you know, to like when you make your notes, and I'll say, what's today's date? And they'll say, well, this is this, and I'll say, oh, June 17. And so the very next evening, June 18, a policeman came to my house to arrest my son. It was like 8 p.m. in the evening. And he said, I know he's in there, and I come to take him in. I said, take him in for what? He said, well, I have a warrant for his arrest for indecent exposure with the teacher. And I said, well, I would like to get a lawyer for my son. And before I said, I'll turn him in. I'll bring him in. So he said, well, he would give me till the next morning to get with a lawyer. And so he said, I'll be back in the morning. Well, I took my son and went and hired an attorney. And she called this was on the 19th because this was a Friday. And anyway, she called the DA's office. She called the town hall where I spoke with the police that was saying that, you know, that her statement didn't add up and all that. And she just couldn't get anything from nobody. And she said, this is strange. Nobody's answered. Nobody can tell me nothing of what this child has been charged with. Has he been charged or what? So I had a friend to call. The friend said they don't have anything on Matthew Moore. And I said, well, they came to get him. The policeman came to get him last night. The lawyer was saying, well, they're saying they don't have anything on him. So Monday, my friend called again. And she said, they don't have anything here on Matthew Moore. You want to talk to the DA? And my friend told I guess this is like the secretary for the DA. She told the lady no, that she did not want to talk to the DA. She just wanted to know. About 5 p.m. that evening, the lawyer called me and she said, I finally found out what Matthew has been charged with. I said, what? She said, obscenity. I said, obscenity? She says, yes. I said, that's a felony. She said, I know it is. She said, but he's been charged with obscenity, and you need to turn him in. And so the following day, I think it was the next day, but anyway, I turned him in. He was placed on a $10,000 bond. And I bailed him out. I mean, I turned him in the same day, so I was able to get him back out. And so this went, I mean, everything was, you know, all right, till he went to school. Well, no. The lawyer that I had, it was something about her. Well, it was some things that I had asked her to check out, and she just seemed nonchalant about it, about looking into things like I was asking about the cameras and all of that, and she just looked like, you know, like she wasn't interested in it. Or the way I got from her is, well, I got so many cases, this ain't nothing, you know. But it was something to me because I wanted to see what was on the cameras. And so I terminated her. And so I got another lawyer who told me that he could get it straight for me, and that he could have even gotten Matthew's bond reduced. Well, after his fee was $2,000, and I guess about a week after he had gotten the $2,000, then he starts talking iffy. Well, he says, look like nobody believes in your son but you. I said, oh, really? Well, why you didn't tell me that when I paid you?
Let me ask you a question. These lawyers in the area, what it sounded like is that somebody got to these lawyers also. These are people that you went and sought out to represent you all, or your son?
Yes, yes.
And this system, I think people need a little background. This what area of Louisiana is this happening?
This is East Feliciana Parish.
Now, the DA that you're dealing with, for those who didn't have a background on the DA, he's a black guy, white guy?
He's white.
Okay, and you're black? And yes. Did you have any dealings with the DA beforehand?
Like what? What you mean? Talking to him?
No, no. I mean, did you have any, did he know you from any prior cases?
Yes, he had arrested me prior to this. He had falsely arrested me on a felony theft felony theft of
what I guess what I'm trying to get to. Okay,
contract of fraud.
Now did you not file a complaint against this DA?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so what I'm trying to do is
filed a complaint against him.
Right, draw a parallel to why now maybe, not maybe, but we know why now, how the system is so corrupt that they will actually go after your loved ones to get back at someone because you were within your right to file a complaint against them, but now your son is being victimized because they want to get back at you.
Right.
You filed also a complaint against the judge, right?
I filed a complaint against the DA for falsely arresting me, and the judge for like covering up for him and not allowing my preliminary hearing, which I could have presented the evidence, but he blocked it because.
Okay, now is this where'd you file the complaint at? With the state bar?
I filed with the disciplinary counsel. On the DA with the disciplinary counsel, and I filed with the judicial commission on the judge.
Okay. You filed against the judge. Who do you file against the judge with? I guess that's what I'm asking.
The judicial commission.
Okay. So what we're hearing now, I just want to kind of bring, I know it's not bringing them all the way up, but people kind of got an idea of why these type things are coming out and why this story seems so bizarre is that from what we found from a previous case, it's a form of retaliation. How dare you come against me, Mr. DA? Is this not the same DA that's having trouble now with some other members of the black community for some death of a...
Yes, those seven people that were killed in Florida, Louisiana.
Right.
Yes. And they have been coming to court also in support of their loved ones and seeking justice for their loved ones that were killed in that automobile crash. And yes, he is the same one. He is a person that, like certain cases, where there's evidence, clear evidence of a crime, he can sweep it under the rug, or some people that he wants to mess with that has done nothing or nothing that he can prove, he'll go after them tooth and nail.
Wow. So I think that what I was trying to do is give some of the listeners some background on exactly what they bring a correlation between so you know what's going on and why would these people have this
vendetta.
Vendetta, that's the word I'm looking for, against you. And I think that makes a big difference. But you can go ahead with the story. I thought that needed to be brought out. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine. Well, what was I?
You.
We were
about judge. I mean, you were talking about a case where you was asking for the cameras, I think it was.
Yes. I was asking for the cameras, but then I was telling you about it. I had this second lawyer, and then the second lawyer, after he got half of the money, then he starts talking iffy. He pretty much told me, he says, well, if I do this, Mr. Beecham's white back will be against the wall. And I'm like, I don't care about Mr. Beecham. I'm paying you. I'm concerned about my son. Well, it seems like nobody believes in your son but you, this, that, the other. And I'm trying to work this thing out. I said, there's nothing to work out. Just subpoena the cameras and let me look at the film on the camera. I said, my son said he didn't do anything wrong, and I said, I believe him. And just help me to get the cameras. And he didn't really want to talk on that because he's trying to cover the back of the superintendent, and he's friends with the DA. And so
okay.
I didn't really know the depth of it at the time. And so we parted.
Now, what was this lawyer's name? I'm sorry.
His name was Clayton Calhoun. And I had been
Clayton
told
Calhoun.
That he was the best. Well, I was told by some very trustworthy people that he was the best in the parish for, as you know, defending the rights of you know, innocent people, but evidently
uh-huh.
not, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Probably defending
yeah.
the rights of independent white people.
And
yeah.
well, I found out afterwards. I found out that these are people that have actually did crimes, and what he does is like get plea deals and stuff like that. But for a person,
he's like a Small, Michael Small. You
right.
hear?
Yeah, but that's
Ryan,
up my
like
ear. No, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What's the percentage? What's the ratio of the black population in the area that you're in?
Now, at one time I thought that it was more black here than it was white, but I learned that it's not. But the ones, but unlike Jenna or some of these other places, there's still quite a few black people here. And I'm namely speaking now for his voting, young people, but they just don't do anything. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take any kind of a leadership role. They don't have no kind of community voice or nothing. They just exist. They don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of what the problem was. I remember a time, you know. You would have a person that would like put the they would pretty much put the ballot together of who they were going to support for office, and without a doubt that person would go in, but I don't know. Look like it appears to me. Now, I don't know about you all, but it just like the momentum went down after, what's his name, former Governor
Obama.
Edwards? No, after Governor
yeah, oh.
Edwards went to prison. It looked like it's just like everything just like just went down. The momentum just like nobody cared. And I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but it just seemed like to me that after he went to prison, like, it just wasn't that drive to do anything anymore. Ones like Cleo Fields and different ones like that that were kind of active and speaking out and doing things, you can't hear from them now for nothing. And so it appears that a lot of black people like kind of like fell into that mode, you know, and you know, it's just like a depression. It's like a depression.
Right.
Okay.
But we can't just let that guide us, or can't let that overcome us. We have to keep fighting. And so, anyway. I got rid of this lawyer after he told me about the superintendent's back would be against the wall. So he's telling me he's not really interested in my son.
Now, question. So are you saying now that this is the second lawyer that you had to get rid of?
That's right.
And you paid both of these lawyers ahead of time?
What happened?
The first lawyer
charged me $1,200. And I think I didn't pay her the full $1,200. I think I gave her like $200 because it was like the beginning of the case when I found out that she told me some things that she had done, and then when I called the court to confirm it, because I was trying to figure out what the bail was for my son, they said they had never. She had never called in, and when I called her about it, she was kind of like, you know, like that's routine, or like, just like I guess a person just you have a bunch of people that you see you, and so that's nothing new. And so she was like, well, you know, if you don't think that I'm doing a good job or something like that, well, you know. So anyway, she told me that just give her $300. And so then someone was telling me about the second lawyer, so I got him. And I just knew that he was going to get it straight, especially for me seeing the cameras. And that's kind of like just went out the window. At first he was saying, oh, well, they don't have any cameras. They don't have anything. And they, you know, they got him on camera doing this. Then, you know, I'm gonna get that film. And then it's like 2 or 3 weeks, then he's talking shady. You know, well, this, that, the other, and we can do this, and we, you know, like deal making. And I said, no, we have a right to see these the footage from this camera. And then you said you was going to do this. Well, Ms. Connor, this, that, the other, and these things are complicated, and she is a teacher. And so his whole demeanor had changed. And so that was $1,000.
So you got basically two lawyers that you hired. You end up firing both of the lawyers because it looked like they were in cahoots with the evidently the DA. And son is in trouble, and you can't get a simple DVD, video, whatever they call it.
Couldn't get it.
To confirm or to strike off what this lie this teacher told.
Right.
Now, so at this
hold
point
up,
in time, you're in limbo because nobody wants to push the issue of you getting this film, even though the superintendent act like he wanted to see it. He doesn't even push the issue at all also.
No.
Wow.
Okay, what was the what's the name of the first lawyer?
The first lawyer was, let me see, well, last name was Wilson. Let me see. I can't think of what his first name right up, but her last name was Wilson.
Okay.
And she's a civil rights lawyer. That's one reason why I thought that, I don't know, I just thought she would be.
She would do, yeah.
Yeah. And then the second lawyer was named Clayton Calhoun. He's from this parish. And I had got a lot of good reports about him. But later on, after this happened and I, you know, terminated him, then different people were saying he is a good lawyer, but he's like a lawyer, like, say, for instance, a person may have did a simple crime or something like that, and he can get it, like, broke down to some kind of plea deal or something, opposed to somebody being innocent, you know.
Exactly,
proven innocent.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
So that wasn't what I wanted. If he couldn't do what I wanted, he shouldn't have taken the case.
Yeah.
So then it was the third lawyer. You probably saw him in on the news. He called himself, I didn't know at the time that he called himself the thug lawyer. He's a Jamaican or something. He wears his braids. And that was when my son had went to school, and they illegally removed him from his school and put him back in jail because they didn't want him at the school. And that's when I hired, what's his name? Just give me a second.
Now, Ms. Connor,
Peter
why,
John.
Why you,
that's his name, Peter John.
Okay.
Now you're saying, now let's make let everyone know that your son was arrested a second time out of the school, but this is after the judge said he could return back to school.
That's right. Right. The judge said he could return to school, and there's no way I would have subjected my son to the embarrassment and then being locked away like that if the judge hadn't okayed it.
Now, even after you talked to the police officer, proved that the judge had said it was okay, the officer still then called the district attorney to find out if it was okay after the judge had already made his order.
That's right.
He verified it. Am I correct?
That's right. And
this is the corruption in these small towns where a judge made a ruling, and after the judge made a ruling, the police officer still did not abide by the judge's ruling, turned around, and had to call the district attorney, who has no jurisdiction once the judge makes a ruling, to see if it was okay if this young man could go back to school.
That's right.
Wow.
And after that happened, I can imagine, I suspect what happened, because my son was placed under arrest right there and taken back to jail. At first they told me it was a 72-hour hold, and I'm asking them, you know, what are you putting him on arrest again for? The policeman told me at that time for the charge of the new teacher who claimed she saw him. And I said, no, the judge ruled on all of both of those yesterday. He put them both on the same bill. Well, this is for Miss Paige Fleming. And I said, you know, subject to the fact that that wasn't right, because the judge had already ruled on that. Okay, they took Matthew to jail, so they had on the paper, the court notice, for a 72-hour hold. A 72-hour hold turned into 5 days and a $40,000 bond.
What?
Yes. His boy spent 5 days in jail on a $40,000 bond, and my property is still being held to this day. This has been since 2009. And
now what, that's a property bond?
Yes. My property is tied up right now. And
he didn't flee, so why is your property still tied up?
Huh?
Why is your property still tied up? He didn't flee.
Well, this is just court. A friend of mine bailed me out on a $25,000 bond, and what the bond is supposed to do is to ensure that you appear in court.
Right.
Exactly.
And when I appeared in court and was sentenced, that should have been the end of that. That judge held her property, I don't know, about a year or more.
Can they do? I don't know if they can do that.
And
they
she
do
wrote,
whatever they want to do. With
she wrote to the Judicial Commission about it and told them that that was illegal, and they pretty much said, yeah, well, he's a judge, he can do what he want to do. And
but
I know that's not true. That's not true.
But they do it, and they do it, and it's nobody to slap them on the wrist. I know, I mean, boy, that's what they get, slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
Nobody to call their hand.
And he held her property till I guess he saw where I wasn't going to appeal anymore. All through the appeal process, from the appellate to the Louisiana Supreme Court, he held her property. And when the Supreme Court denied my writ, then after that he dropped it. I've never seen anything like it. And so the same thing is with my son. My property has been held ever since 2009, and they illegally removed my son from his school. I contacted the U.S. Department of Education, Civil Rights Division in Washington, D.C., and they pretty much told me that since this stemmed from his job as a student worker, they couldn't do anything. Now, that had nothing to do with what, I mean, him working at the school. I mean, they removed him from his school, so the U.S. Department of Education should have done something. But this is what they say. And so anyway, I hired Peter John. I didn't find out till later till he was in the news that he called himself the thug lawyer. But anyway, I hired him when they put my son in jail, and he wrote a letter asking the court, asking the judge to verify whether or not he told us that Matthew could go back to his school. Because when Matthew gets out of jail, he don't want to go back to school and have the same thing happen to him. The judge didn't answer the letter.
Wow.
Mm.
Now, is this a black lawyer now?
Yes, Peter John's a black lawyer.
All the other lawyers are white.
Yes.
The judge didn't answer the black lawyer's letter.
No, he didn't answer. The lawyer, well, he called me and he said, I called the judge and I told him he was holding Matthew illegally. And he wrote a letter asking him to verify whether or not what he told us in court. And because he didn't want the same thing to happen if Matthew's bailed out of jail and he returns to his school. And so there was no answer from the judge as to say, well, no, I said he couldn't go back to school or whatever. He said nothing. So when I bailed Matthew out of jail, I kept him at the house. And so the truancy officer called me and told me that the superintendent said he was sorry for what happened to Matthew. It shouldn't have happened. He wanted to sit down with us and talk with us and apologize to us. But Matthew could go back to his school. I said, well, I don't want him to go back to his school and then he'd be arrested again. And she said, no, it's clear now. It's okay. He can go back to his school. Matthew went back to school and stayed in school until he graduated. And but those charges were still on him. And so that lawyer, he was talking about some kind of plea deal. Matthew takes some kind of
Let me interrupt you for a second.
Uh-huh.
Let everybody know how old your son was when this started happening to him.
17.
I just want to make it clear, this is to a 17-year-old black male that haven't even got out of the chute, so to speak, of life, to start his life. And right before he could even get out of the school system, they've already set up a record for him.
Right.
It shows that they're already breaking him down,
right,
or trying to break him down so that he could do no more than something mediocre or barely make it. If people cannot see the systematic process of breaking down black people and the black male in particular.
Right.
We have a serious problem on our hands.
And what really just grates my soul is that the woman that accused him is a black woman, and she's not like some preppy young teacher fresh out of college. This is a senior citizen. And so I'm not saying it's okay for you to go around and expose yourself to anyone for that matter, but what I'm saying is that
she wasn't attractive enough to do it to.
Huh?
She wasn't attractive enough to do it to. She wouldn't be the person that normally this would happen to.
No, but I'm saying, did it warrant all that? And then I asked this woman, I said, do you think he deliberately exposed himself to you? She said, no, Ms. Connor, but I think he needs help. And then I told her, I said, I don't think my son needs any help. I said, this is totally out of character for Matthew. And I said, Matthew have worked at this school since he was 15. And I said, I just can't fathom this, him doing anything like
well,
what you say.
Well, to me, it just proves, regardless, really there's no argument on this case because it shows that it's a lie because nobody, you've talked to, from my understanding, 3 to 4 different people, nobody want to produce the footage. There's footage there that will exonerate him, but nobody wants to produce it, so
nobody
it proves there that they were lying on him.
Do it, and then, so I...
No, hold up. What is the name of the teacher? Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt you. What is the name of the teacher, the first teacher that accused
him?
The
first teacher is Deborah Collins Anderson. She's assistant principal at East Feliciana High now, but she was assistant, well, assistant principal. I think she is like with the middle school children now, but she was assistant principal with the high school students then. And I didn't know that she had previously sexually harassed another male student. You know, all this had happened, and then I began to ask questions. You know, you love your children, but you still want to know the truth. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And whether it hurts you or not, and I know that Matthew had never displayed any kind of, you know, character like that or nothing. It just seemed sick of what she was saying. And so I started asking people, and I said, well, I never had no trouble out of her. But I said, I know this is not my child. And when I started asking people, it's just like drinking something too sweet. You know, you just drink something sweet and you just get sick of the stomach. And you'd be like, how come I hadn't asked about this before? But I had no reason. And people were saying, oh, that woman, that's all she do is run the students. She harasses these students. Your blouse is too revealing, this, that, the other. And then that's when the librarian told me about her son. She said that she inappropriately touched him. And he told her something to the effect that she was old enough to be his mother. And she told me, she said, I had to come to that school every day for like 5 days because the parent would get him out of ISS, which is in-school suspension. Miss Anderson would find a reason to put him back in there. And the secretary even told me that. She says, oh, she's something else. She said she did that for 5 days and said then she went to the school board and she reported what had happened and she reported Miss Anderson retaliating against her son. And she said the school board did nothing. And when I was telling her about what she, you know, accused Matthew of, she said, no, I would never believe Matthew would do anything like that. And said, furthermore, the students that know her, they run from her. Because it's always a mess or some controversy or somebody is kissing behind a Coke machine or they behind a door doing this and that. And she's always trying to find something on the students. She's picking at them and all this. But I just came too late to know that she was this kind of person because she always impressed me as like very soft-spoken. You know, just
but
real
what,
kind, and I just never, you know, I just never suspected it until I started asking other parents. I started, and then I even had some teachers to tell me about her. And they were saying, like, I wouldn't want this to get back because I work here. I said, but that woman is something, and you need to do whatever you can to fight this with your child. And one parent told me, she said, Miss Connor, I'm sorry that happened to Matthew. She said, Matthew is one of my favorite students. And she said, that woman ought to drop that crap. But we've been fighting it ever since, but it's just like, you know, it just looked like there's no end to it. But I think because they illegally removed him from the school, they feel that maybe they could be sued for it, you know, too. And the fact that I kept hammering on the footage from the camera,
mm-hmm.
and I told him, I said, well, let me see the footage from the cameras of the day that they sent the police to the school and illegally removed him. Nobody said nothing about that. I said, well, let me see the cameras of the day that I brought him back to school and y'all turned me away. It was just like none of that computed. Just like it was just shut out. And
man.
So then I asked about this other teacher. I said, now, you're saying that he's supposed to expose himself to another senior citizen in another school. This is a middle school. Okay, let me see the cameras from that school. Nobody says nothing. And I'm like, well, why does it take this woman 2 months or more to come forward with this? Well, she said she saw him over there. This is supposed to be a zero-tolerance school. So why, if this happened, why didn't she report this right away? And if you all had been at trial, you would have really, I mean, you know, would have really just saw the inconsistencies in their stories. I mean, it was just awful, mm-hmm. and they allowed the second teacher to sit through the testimony of the first teacher, and she was in there taking notes, and she even took a notepad up on the stand, and the judge asked her for it, you know, asked her for it, and I asked the lawyer about that, and he was saying, well, you all in here. I said, yeah, but that's besides the point. We don't have to be in here. They're not supposed to be in here giving testimony together. And it was just a setup.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard, and I see it's just awful. I'm on the internet all the time looking at the videos of Lawless America of the victims that he has interviewed, and
mm-hmm.
Corruption is just overwhelming. It's just overwhelming.
You know what, Catherine, what I noticed about him, and I don't know, maybe I'm missing something about Lawless America. I know I hear you talking about them. I don't see no black victims. I only seen white. Have you seen any black ones?
Yeah.
I've seen at least four. Okay. All right. Okay.
And I'm supposed to be on there. I think he's in Texas now. But I think it's that, I think it's just who wants to come out. Because a lot of people are afraid.
Yeah, afraid to come out. Yeah.
A lot of them are afraid.
You know, a lot of people have a fear of retaliation.
Yeah.
You talking about bullying. We talk about bullying, and they think it's just in the school system. Well, the bullying and the white supremacy of racism.
It is
every
yeah.
day. If we look at what these judges, they're gods in these courtrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody overrules them. Whatever they say, I mean, when a judge can basically take information, tell you you can't present it in court, that could exonerate you and you should be able to walk, allows it. How is that justice? How can that be any kind of equality of justice in a system where your evidence is suppressed by a judge? I mean,
yeah.
It just, that's the statement in your face. I mean, and it's, to me, it's time that people stand up against this, but they have a code of honor in the court system. We are paying the money to run these court systems. The court systems are ran, and they're not all black folks. Are not guilty. These are charges. Just, I talked to a young lady earlier tonight before we came on the air. They're ruining the lives of our people.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the biggest part of it. The money's been taken from them. Their freedom has been taken, and their lives are being ruined even after they get out.
That's right. Because once you get a conviction in your record, people still tend to look at you as as if you committed the crime. A lot of people still look at you as, well, she could have did
exactly.
it. Just, you know, it's like a stigma that you never get rid of. I'm serious.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It's just, you know, like a never-ending story. But I plan to tell my story. If I could get on a, climb up a mountain and climb up on a mountaintop, I was screaming from a mountaintop. A lot of people tell me here, they say, you be getting on the internet, you be posting this and you be posting that. I wouldn't do this. You know, I wouldn't do that. I said, that's what they want you to do.
And they, you have to have, I mean, it's time for black people to stop acting like heels and stop bowing down to these men. You got, just think about it, if our people back in the day who went through way worse than what we're going through now, did what they put now, hiding behind master, hiding because they're scared of master and they're scared of the slave master's children, where would we be today? You know, it's so sad that we, in this day and time, 2012, we're going through this, but then we have these folks that are still out there hiding. Oh, I can't say nothing because I got my good job. And but then still, their grandchildren after
that's how I lost my job. Same way, writing people up. It wasn't, well, it said, well, she, I was injured on the job, and they said that I had exhausted all my leave, which I had, but my thing was I wasn't the only one. There was four other people, and they had been out much longer than me. But after I wrote them up and told them how they treated me differently than those people, and all of a sudden I was terminated. And that case has been in court now 12 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, 12 years. And the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission accepted my choice. But a vital piece of the paperwork that I was supposed to have sent in, I didn't send it in as a mediation form. And when I found out that I hadn't sent it in and I called, well, I was wondering how come they hadn't called me to mediate. When I called to find out what the holdup was, then they said they didn't get the form, and so my case had went to another department within the EEOC, and that's when they turned around and said they didn't see where I had a charge. Now, how can that be? The first investigator saying, oh, yeah, you got a charge. They discriminated against you. There's some retaliation. Now, it's in another department in the same company, so to speak. They can't find anything.
Well, I just saw a post that was sent to me by a friend of mine a few days ago where.
By the EEOC?
High ranking official in the EEOC who had retired.
Yes, I got that too.
Okay, telling how they've been mistreating black people when it came to EEOC complaints.
Yeah, but see, you know what? I used to be the union secretary of AFG in the VA, and we went through the classes because you have to take the classes, and I took the EEOC class. And basically, the EEOC is not for you. It's not for the worker. It's not for the employee. It's for the employer. Their job mainly is to make sure that the employer is doing what they're supposed to be doing. It keeps the employer out of trouble, not the people. And I try to tell that to everybody, as many people as I can. When you run to the EEOC, let me tell you something. EEOC is not about you. Everything that you're telling them that has anything to do with your case is going directly back to the people that you're supposed to be going against.
I know that's right because when it went to the second department or the division of the EEOC, and they wrote back and said, well, we don't see any discrimination. Now, there was an option on there where they could have checked, and what they should have checked off and said, well, we didn't hear from you. We didn't hear from you about mediation, and so we're giving you a right to sue. They checked off. They didn't see any discrimination, and that also that my doctor said I could go back to work. Now, where did they get that from? They got it from the employer.
Yeah, they had to get that from the employer. Because they wouldn't got that information.
Yeah, and your doctor said you could go back to work. I'm like, where did this come in at? what do you know about my doctor? Other than what I mentioned in my complaint, but I didn't, you know, I didn't specifically say. I just said I was under the doctor's care, and I had been off work. I had exhausted all my leave time, but there's four other people that had exhausted their leave time for more than a year, and mine was only for like 2 weeks, and they immediately got rid of me. And this is what she wrote back: well, we don't see any discrimination. We're giving you a right to sue, and your doctor said you could go back to work. And I'm like, where did they get this from? They got it from the employer.
So did your doctor tell you you could go back to work?
No, he wasn't my doctor. This is what happened.
Oh, was their doctor?
It's a doctor that they got.
Okay.
To get the kind of results that they wanted.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. That's how they do it.
The doctor that I had at the time said I could go back to work on light duty. When I came back to work on light duty, they said that they didn't have any light duty for me, and they sent me home. Okay, so after I was at home about like almost 3 weeks, I wrote them a letter and told them, you know, that basically, well, they told me that they was going to send me a duty list to give to my doctor so he can, like, come up with some duties that I could do. Well, after I didn't hear from them approximately 3 weeks, I wrote them a letter and asked for the duty list. And then I told them, you know, that I was just wasting time sitting at home, and how they had treated me differently than they treated some of the other employees and trying to find me some light duty. And just a lot of other stuff just came out of the way they treated me differently than some of the other employees there. And the next thing I know, they were sending me a letter saying, your doctor, Dr. Lewis, that was the doctor they used, said you could come back to work full duty, and failure to do so could result in termination. And they hammered that until they got rid of me. They hammered on that until they got rid of me.
Had you ever seen this doctor?
I had saw her. I had saw her. But what it was, when she finished with me, she referred me back to my primary physician. And the primary physician sent me to work on light duty. And so they said they didn't have any light duty. So, okay, when I wrote this up, they went back and got Dr. Lewis, that was the doctor, to say, oh, Miss Connor can do these activities. She can do this and do that. And the woman hadn't seen me in over 30 days. She didn't know if I was dead or alive. But this is the kind of things that they do. I think any time a doctor is going to send you back to work or whatever, especially if you done had an injury or whatnot, first off, that primary doctor got to refer you back to him because that person has referred you back to the primary doctor. So the primary doctor got to refer you back to them to see what, you know, if you can go back to work or not. But that didn't happen. So they just used her to trip me up because I came back to work and my leg buckled on me. And I think I went out of there in a rescue unit. They had to call a rescue unit for me. In 2 weeks' time, they had fired me. And I had 23 years there.
Oh, my God.
I was 7 years from a full retirement. And that case has been in court ever since. This is another case where I've tried to get transcript from from my workers' compensation trial, of which when I wouldn't settle with them, they closed the case anyway. And I could never get this transcript of their trial. Never. Never get it. I got the written, but that is not the tape of the trial. This is not the transcript of the trial. It's been doctored. And I could never get it. But hopefully, when I'm interviewed with Bill Windsor, I'm going to play that tape. I got part of that tape. They wouldn't give it to me, but I got part of it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to play. I got enough to prove that they tampered with this transcript.
Man, just so they won't have to pay you. This is all behind money.
All I was asking them to do at that point, no, they wanted me to settle with them for $3,000. They was telling me all the doctors they had let me, you know, they had let me saw, and they had paid out so much money on my cases or whatnot, and they thought they only owed me $3,000. I'm not denying it. They did let me see a lot of doctors. But what I really needed was the physical therapy this, that last time, and they wouldn't approve it. And really, that's what contributed to my leg buckling, because you know, it was a nerve. They kept saying they sent me to a bone doctor, and they said the bone doctor said wasn't nothing wrong with my bones or anything like that. And that bone doctor turned out to be their doctor too. So they like contributed to my injury by delaying the physical therapy, and when I got the physical therapy, finally got it. I was terminated then, but then that's when.
Okay,
this...
so let me ask you something. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Uh huh.
So did you want to go back to work?
Yes, the tape would have proved that I wanted to go back to work, but they was trying to. I figured it out later. They told me, they said, we have a job. Did you know that we have a job, a full-time job? And I asked them, was they willing to work with my disability because I had just had back surgery? I said, yeah. And they didn't say anything. When I asked them, you know, so will you help me work myself back in, they didn't say anything. They said, well, Ms. Connor, you can go ahead with your EEOC suit. Just let us out of it. That's what they told me. Just let us out of it. I said, no, I don't want to settle. I just want my back pay of my benefits that you owe me. I want my mileage. I want to keep my medical, and I want to go back to my job. And they shut that case down. I guess they say, well, you ain't got to settle with us. We'll settle it. And I'm laughing, but they did. They
you've crushed. Been through it. So
yes.
You've been through a lot.
It's yes, like I have.
This big cloud over you.
And now, can you give us the actual area that this is happening in?
Yeah.
Huh?
The area that this is happening in. Where is this happening at?
My employer at that time was in this parish too.
Give us the city. Give us the parish.
Jackson, Louisiana.
Now, this is Louisiana, and what parish is that? The parish
East Feliciana Parish.
West Feliciana. That's the same
as
the county, folks.
No,
Louisiana.
No.
We are backwards with last and everything. There's,
hey, Brian, wait. She's trying to say something.
Go ahead.
It wasn't. It's East Feliciana Parish.
East Feliciana Parish.
Yes.
Jackson, Louisiana.
Yes, that's where I was working at, and the name of the hospital is Eastern Louisiana Mental Health System.
Yeah, that, I believe I went down to that one time. I traveled down and had to make a delivery one time years ago.
Okay,
wow. And I know what that is. So what we're seeing is that this South, and this is why it's known as the Dirty South, folks,
mm-hmm.
Louisiana is part of that system, that white supremacy and superiority rules king when it comes to us as black people trying to get a fair shake just in everyday life of living. She didn't have this elaborate job. She didn't have this a whole lot of money. But they, especially in these smaller places, are taking out on us just trying to make it. They go and they try to retaliate on you. They do illegal tactics against you. And because a lot of time we don't have voices, this is what happens to us.
Yes.
Did you seek any help from any organization, any civil rights groups that supposedly are helping black people with this kind of problem, or people, any people with this kind of problem?
You're talking about your job part of the...
Any of it, job or the the case?
With the job, I talked to EEOC, and they were going to mediate for me, but because they didn't get that mediation agreement sheet back, they couldn't, and so then my case went to another part of division within the EEOC, who said they didn't see any discrimination, and so then therefore they gave me the right to sue, and so then I had to pay, you know, I had to get a lawyer, and the lawyer just kind of like just sat on it, and the judge sat on it till he basically died, and that was Ralph Tyson. He sat on my case until a year before he died.
They did that on purpose. See, what happened with you, you, in a sense, dropped the ball when you didn't send that mediation paper.
That's right.
In other words, they were saying you were trying to get back at them by not sending the mediation paper, and they sent your whole case somewhere else. And they said, go ahead and sue. Because you know what? They knew already what would happen if you go ahead and sue. That wasn't a good thing for you. That was really a bad thing, because they knew already that people were going to sit on that case as long as they did. That's why they told you that.
But let me just say that I didn't send the paper. I meant to send the paper. It wasn't like I was withholding the paper. I sent all the papers, but that one, they said that one, it wasn't in there. And come to find out, I found it later, it wasn't in there. But I thought because the EEOC had typed it up themselves, they typed it for me. They knew I wanted to mediate, but they said that one paper stood in the way, so it went on to another department. But I just didn't think. It's like you come so far to fall, and I just said, y'all gonna let this paper here stand in the way, y'all type it up.
They'll do that, because I keep trying to tell you, EEOC is not for the employee, it's for the employer. All they have to do is make sure that the employer is doing what they're supposed to do. That's why they didn't make a big deal out of it. Because it's for the employer. That's what they taught us in that class. And that's why I do not recommend EEOC to anybody. When I learned that, that was it. Because I had a case also similar to something like that. But mine was, they accused me of doing something I didn't do, and they proved that I didn't do it. But I had to go through that process. EEOC doesn't give a crap about the employee, point blank. They're not for us. They're definitely not for. They make that name, that title, is a title to entice us to want to go to them. EEOC is basically for the employer, to make sure the employers are going by the rules and regulations that they're supposed to go by. That's it. So that's why I'll never recommend EEOC to nobody. Never. And no job. I'm not saying all of them bad, but the main point for them to be in place is for the
When I saw the reason why they said they was giving me a right to sue, you had a number of different reasons that they check off to give you the right to sue. And when I saw that they had checked off, it was almost like I had never even talked to the first charge officer. This was a new case. And I said to myself, something is crooked about y'all. Because even if I didn't get the paper signed and back to them on time, they knew that I had planned to mediate. So I thought they would have said something to the effect that mediation had been discussed, but the client didn't show up. Because that was an option that they could have checked off, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could have given you another chance. Wouldn't have been nothing for them to give you another chance. They weren't in a hurry to solve your case anyway. So they could have given you another opportunity to get that paperwork in. That would have been nothing.
Well, that's what the first investigator said. He said they'll probably give you a right to sue, but they might, since you didn't get the paperwork, that paper back, and you have all the other paperwork in, they might decide to mediate from that division. but they did.
Yeah. It's like an ongoing thing. Is if you only knew the stories that we're getting for all the corruption that is going on, it's amazing that these people sleep at night. They get up in the morning and they start the corruption all over again, every day, day in and day out. And we are not educated enough, or we don't want to educate ourselves enough to know, to see it coming. If we were prepared for it when it's coming and teach ourselves and learn what we learn about it, we get too secure in our jobs. We get secure in our lives. We're secure in everything, and we're not alert.
No, I was just saying one of the things is like one of the things we're saying we get secure is that the problem is with black people here in the United States is that we don't understand who we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And when I say we don't understand who we're dealing with, they're not most of them. I won't say all of them, but most of them are not like us.
Yeah.
You know, I get so tired of when one of our own can help another flatter, so we have to be fair with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And one little bit of help could help another one of us. But yet, every time we turn around, somebody's taking a hammer, crunching us across the fingers with knocking us down the ladder. And then we don't understand the mindset of a people who think they are superior to us and why we're going through this. Until we start finding out who it is that we're dealing with, and you cannot, because somebody smiles in your face, pats you on the back, and say, you're so nice, and don't think they're your friend. You have to, like walking in a snake den, but these snakes are not venomous. You have to put your arm on like they are venomous, because you never know which one is going to strike with poison. So we have to start learning. I don't care if you've been on the job 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You have
to get you secure.
I'm not talking about you just, Ms. O'Connor. I'm talking about all of us. We have
right.
to start learning. When we leave our home, we're in the wilderness. We're in the wooded areas with a lot of wild animals. And they would.
You can say that again.
Any chance they can get. They will take us out. They know who we are, and we don't even know who we are ourselves. They know who they're dealing with. They know that we're special. Knocked in the head and left for dead, and we better wake up. Somebody better pick up that book, Message to the Black Man, and read it, because we lost. Until we pick up that book and learn what's going on here, we're going to be hurting worse and worse and start coming back and doing something for our own people.
That's right.
Yeah. And we have to learn also that, I mean, I'm not saying it's not is anything wrong with being friends with, you know, and but you have to be careful. You have to be alert with everybody, even our own people, because they use our own people against us. Okay?
They do.
They'll use our own people against us. And you think these people are your friends, and you find out, man, wait a minute, hold up. What are you doing? You don't push me out to the wolves. Here they go. Here, take it. You know, you serving me to the wolves on a silver platter. And that's what, it's just like you have to stay away. I'm like this because of what I went through being at the VA hospital and the service and all the things that I did and being part of the union and what the union taught me. I can't go back there and pretend like nothing ever happened to me. I can't go back there and pretend that, oh, I forgive all these people who stabbed me in the back and left me hanging and all the times that I've helped them in their situation. I can't go back and smile and make it seem like it's fine and everything is great. Oh, it's lovely. I can't do that because even my own people were saying, hanging me out to dry. My own people. When all that was done was not even true. I was a union secretary. Believe it or not, that is like one of the second or third powerful positions you can have in the union.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a voice, and I helped all the employees that were having problems with these managers and supervisors. I could talk to a manager. I could sit down and do a mediation. I had no problem with that. I knew that blue book. The problem was they didn't know the blue book. That master agreement, I knew how to read that master agreement.
They just didn't know how to read it, or they never read it until they start harassing an employee or doing something to an employee. That's when they wanted to pick it up and use it. Mm-hmm. So there was always a battle going on. But I've helped a lot of these people, these employees that smiled in my face and hung out with me. I helped them. But when I needed them, they stepped away. Oh, no, I can't do it. My job, I got kids to feed. But you allow me, like I wasn't important, you allow me to hang out and drive. And that's why I have the attitude I do, and I don't care what nobody say. I know how these people are. I've been there, done that. And I have no need to smile and laugh in nobody's face if I don't want to when it comes to taking care of people. That's why I do what I do. That's why I like what I do, helping other people, because I know it's hard. I know how it is when you don't have the right information to fight your own battle. It's hard out there.
Very hard.
You don't have the power system to help you. Now, the judicial system, the way they're doing us, if we don't wake up with this judicial system, we're doomed. We're doomed.
Right.
We're doomed. If we don't get smart, we got even our own lawyers that's handing us over to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Uh-huh. This
I think about Matthew, all that Matthew's been through. You've had three lawyers. Now, are you
no,
with
this is the fourth one.
You're with a fourth one? What's the fourth one?
The fourth one was the one that let the teachers read off each other's testimony, this last one.
Okay, one, who's he? What's his name?
James Rothkamp.
What?
Yes.
What's the last one?
James Rothkamp.
Hmm.
How do you spell his name, Rothkamp? How do you spell that?
R-O-T-H-K-A-M-M. He came highly recommended too. And I'm not going. Huh?
I mean, no, don't give me no name in general. But so these people being highly recommended to you, and they still ain't nobody in result on nothing.
It's this court, and they're afraid of them. Like, okay, you might be a excellent journalist over there, but over here where the people have conspired and they're in collusion together, you catch hell.
Yeah.
A lot of these lawyers, they want your money, but they don't want, you know, like, you know, they won't tell you like it is. Like, I can't win that. They ain't going to let me win. I'm not going to take your money. Well, they want your money, and they'll give you a little dance or whatever. You have no way of knowing they're not going to do what they say they're going to do till they have most of it. And then they start acting, suspicious, or they start doing or saying things that they weren't saying when you first hired them.
Mm-hmm. So that whole story don't change.
Yeah. At first, if Matthew passed some kind of asthma test to go into the military, the DA was going to drop the charges on him, which would have been fine. I would have loved for him to just get on up around here.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew passed the practice test, but the military said he couldn't take the interest test until those charges were dropped. DA said he wasn't dropping them. He was going to prosecute him, so he convicted him.
Man.
He said he told the other lawyer, if he takes a lie to take the test and he passes it, he could go on back to his school or whatever. So we're like, well, okay, he'll take the lie to take the test. We don't have the money, because I think he said the lie to take the test was like right at $1,000. I said, if the state will pay for it, he'll take it. That went on.
Oh, okay.
So
he's
just been toying with this boy backwards and forward, just toying with him. This DA is not, he ain't stable. He's not.
No, he's stable, all right. He's evil.
Yeah.
And he knows what he's doing, because he knows who he's doing it to. You know,
I'm not talking about.
You may not know any better.
I'm not talking about stable, like, crazy. Like, I'm talking about, like, flip-flop. One time he'll tell you this, and then the next time he'll tell you something else. And
but that's
not,
the way, people like that, when you have, he's a slave master's child, and he's acting just like
yeah.
his forefathers did. We're talking about we're in plantation hubs of the Deep South. These people have not forgotten their roots, nor do they want to let go of their roots, and they think we need to get in our place. We need to submit to someone that they feel is superior, which is white people. This is why
mm-hmm.
they continue to do the things that they do to us, because they feel they are putting us back in our place. We are funding
mm-hmm.
their judicial system. We are the ones that are keeping them afloat. We are the ones that are keeping
mm-hmm.
money in their pockets where they live their lavish lifestyles. And until
mm-hmm.
we start standing up and coming together, and the only way, I mean, I'm almost to the point to where, not almost to the point, I am to the point, that the only way we're going to get justice is to separate from them, because we can see it's been 400 plus years and we're still crying justice. So what else is it
mm-hmm.
for you to separate?
Yeah.
But that's what
yeah,
Malcolm X always did say. Malcolm X, that's what he always said, that we should separate.
If we look at it, just look at it. Look at 400 plus years, and you tell me, I mean, anybody try to tell me, what else can we do? We tried to work with them. We tried to do things with them. We tried to treat them nicely. We don't have in our heart the malice that these people have in their heart for us. We tried everything we can to get along, and every time we turn around, one of us has been murdered, one of us has been wrongly imprisoned, one of us has been beaten up, that we've been tased, we've been shot. How many times do we see black police officers beating up white people? How many times do we see black prosecutors sticking wrongful evidence against white people? You just don't see that. But everybody can turn around and say, oh, but it was a justified beating. Why don't we see white people getting beat up?
Mm-hmm.
Act like white people are doing more crimes than blacks, but yet still black people are the only ones getting beat up, and the white folks are getting off, and all these things are happening to us in this courtroom. It's a systematic racism.
That's what I label my videos, systemic racism.
And if you look at the deal, it's point blank. When you
anytime.
Ask for these film to these cameras,
oh,
you
anytime.
Want footage to show to exonerate your son, and repeatedly they refuse to give them to you. I mean, that's straight up racism.
And then I asked this last lawyer. Well, and
they have no out. They have no. What's that cop out for not bringing them up?
To recuse the district attorney.
The judge is in cahoots,
yeah.
The DA is in cahoots, and those lawyers, maybe with exception, maybe one, I know at least, but most of those lawyers are in cahoots. They're all looking
That's
out
right.
for each other.
That's right. And you couldn't melt a decent lawyer and pour him down in his parish. It's just that bad. I've called lawyers, and when they found out is this parish, you know what they would say? I can tell you somebody else might be interested in that case, but I just don't want to deal with them. I'm gonna be honest with you. Another one told me, 15,000 dollars, because he said I've dealt with that judge before when he was a DA and he was something else, and that's the only way I would deal with him. And so
okay, just one second, y'all. 562.
Hello. How you doing?
Fine.
Great. I just chimed into the show. I just saw it on my Facebook feed, and I said, let me get in on this. And listening to you guys, I am in agreement with you that, you know, we are in a situation of where we basically can't win going about it the way that we've been going about it. It's very sad that we have people in places of authority that we can't turn to ask for any assistance.
Exactly.
You know, because they're afraid of their own shadow and afraid of the of losing the pat on the head of our great quote unquote emancipators.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, you know, wake up and realize that, like the brother said, we've been here for 300 and some odd, 400 some odd years, you know, going the same route, asking them to be our friend, and they don't want our friendship. The only thing they want from us is the few dollars that they give us to give it right back to them. But as soon as we ask for to have a business where we can do for self, they tell us, oh, it's a problem. You know, you being racist, why don't you want to deal with us?
Exactly.
It's all one way and not both ways. And we need to wake up and see that this highway that we're going down has no two lanes. It's only one lane that we're gonna keep going down until we decide to just get off of it and start turning around and go the other way.
Exactly. And us as American, we always want to learn stuff. Okay, if we're about education, why can't we start educating each other? Why can't we get groups together and get teachers to teach us how to go in a courtroom, how to deal with the lawyer? Because you got to remember, back in the 50s and 60s, when they were getting ready to vote, didn't they sit down and teach those kids and those people how to deal with the police? Didn't they go through classes? Didn't they did different scenarios when they went to go sit in the bars? I mean, excuse me, not the bars, the restaurants, how to act when you get hit, how to do what happened? What happened?
If I can answer that by saying this, it sounds like what you're talking about is pre-integration, which is, for lack of a better term, is segregation. And in my estimation, I'm not old enough to have lived through it, but just going off of what I know and what I see, in a way, segregation was better for black people than integration. Integration, in my estimation, is a blank check written and drawn on a non-existing bank that white people gave us as a joke. Like, okay, here's integration. You can drink out this water fountain. You can sit in the front of the bus. You can do all these things that we wouldn't allow you to do at first, you know, to make you feel better. But then when we actually try to go cash said check, they say, oh, we were just kidding. You know, then they say, okay, well, here's your affirmative action. Now you can go get jobs. But, oh, here's the only problem to that is that we're only going to give the black women a job, and we're not going to give too many to the black men. So we got 20 jobs. We're going to give the black men 2. We're going to give the black women 3 or 4, and then we're going to give all the rest of them to white women, because you got to remember that affirmative action really helps white women. And then and now that we're in a technological age, you know, we're going to sort of quote unquote play level the playing field, but only in our advantage. So if you want to have any kind of information being dissipated, you can go to Facebook and things like that, and then we'll control what you say and do. That brings me to one reason why I got on the call, because we have a lot of black websites that are being underutilized by us, and we sit and complain that we don't have anywhere for us to go and share information on our own, but we actually do. We just don't use those avenues. The reason I know that is because, not trying to plug myself, but because I have a website that I started for black people. And I've been trying to get people to, you know, join it. Not just my website. It's a bunch of them, but I mean mine specifically, because I said I started it with the intention of being a place to have such a place to have dialogue and have the information that we can pass on to each other in a positive way, versus sitting on Facebook and trying to get, you know, black Facebook users and black this and black that on a white website. That's kind of like joining a Klan rally and getting mad because they're not talking about black people in a positive way. It's kind of retarded to be doing that.
Exactly.
Felita, I wanted to
let me say something first before you say that.
Okay.
When I said that, the reason why I said that, I know we were talking about segregation and integration. I was talking about the techniques that they used to make these things take place. Even though they were not the best ideals, at least our people came together and tried something. I was talking about the methods that they used and the techniques that they used to people, getting people together and actually listening, and they're learning from whatever that situation that they had to go into. That's what I was talking about. I wasn't talking about us integrating with them. I was talking about the techniques. The
teachings and how they taught them how to go about doing that.
Well, because it was survival. It was a survival mechanism. Exactly. If you want to survive in this situation, you have to basically learn what they are doing and try to use it against them. Now that we've integrated into their system, or at least we have the idea that we've integrated into their system, now we don't need those same tools and thought processes and knowledge because, hey, we got Mr. Jim that we can go to. He's a great lawyer. He'll give us all the information. He'll help us out. Mr. Jim is on their side because and he doesn't really want to change the status quo. That, I was having that conversation with people, you know, because we don't see racism for what it is today, you know, because we have blinders on because we have white friends that are not like the people back in the day. Like I posted a picture of some white kids chasing behind. It was about a group of 4 or 5 white guys behind 2 or 3 black guys. And I said, these people had kids. And what do you think they taught their kids? They didn't just teach them, oh, well, that was bad. I shouldn't have did that. No, they taught them the same thing because it's just, it's like a rock that's going down the hill. It just perpetuates itself. It don't stop.
You know,
so that's what we're up against.
You know, Salida, one thing that we as a people rely on everyone else to do for us. That's one of our biggest. We don't teach anything because we're waiting for white folks to teach us. I always say, how in the world is somebody that don't treat you right going to teach you right? And
that's
we
right.
look like we act like sometimes we can be some of the weakest minded people there is on earth. To think, I mean, eventually if you keep kicking a dog around, he's gonna learn. You know what? I better get away from this man because he's gonna kick me again. But we keep running back for more, instead of picking up and teaching our own what we should need to do to survive and to get along like we had to when our backs were against the wall. But because some people accept us in some arenas, others don't, we just keep running back and kicked again. And we put our children in harm's way to do the same thing, and then when they get kicked, we want to holler and say why.
Well, Sister Salida, if I could say, like I said, you, everybody on this call, from what I've heard the last few minutes, is saying the same exact thing. We all obviously are awake at the wheel when it comes to what recognizing the problems that black people in America have. Now the question is, now that we have said information and said knowledge, what are we going to do with that information? Because, you know, it's good to have the information, we can talk about it and everything, but what plan or action are we actually going to do? Are we going to still go back to Facebook sitting on there complaining about white people while they control what we say? Because a lot of people get on there and they say, you know, they post a picture up of Malcolm X, you know, saying something, you know, about, like the brother said, why would you allow your enemy to teach your children, you know, when they didn't teach you and you had to teach yourself, or something, you know, paraphrase. And then they just block you, you know, or they just delete your post, you know, and you don't even know that it's gone, you know, stuff like that. Because as long as you allow them to do things like that, then they're going to do that. So why do we keep doing that? Why don't we go to these black websites? Like I said, I'm not trying to pump mines up. You know, if you want to use mine, that's fine. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not making money off recruiting people. Huh?
What is your website?
Oh, my. I'm sorry. I thought I said it. It's OurTimeNow.com. OurTimeNow.com. And like I said, I'm not trying to pump mine up. It's a bunch of different websites out there. I don't know exactly all of them, but, I mean, we need to start utilizing them. That way we can start divesting ourselves away from Facebook and Twitter and things like that, because they're not speaking for us. They're speaking they let out information that they want to let out. You know, because they have people on Facebook that are paid to sit there and monitor a bunch of different, you know, accounts because they get flagged for various reasons. You know, if somebody sends in a complaint about you, your account is automatically set up there. So now they got somebody watching what you say. So then you get these messages, do you really want to post that information or do you really want to post this and that? You know, I'm like, okay, so now I know somebody is doing that. How do I know that? Because I got it done to me. I was like, what is this? Do you really want to post this? Like, what? What is this?
What is this?
They actually asked you that?
It's a, well, basically, for a minute, it was a couple months ago, but every time I wanted to post something, like if I wanted to comment on something somebody posted, like one of their statuses or something, when I hit enter, another little message will pop up and say something to the effect of, do you really want to post this message, you know, inappropriate or inappropriate or whatever messages can will be deleted. I was like, wow, okay. So I just deleted it, and then I wrote something else, and then it went through or whatever. But it's just showing you that these people are actually watching what you say.
Exactly.
So that's why I'm saying, you know, nothing that is beneficial for black people is going to be promoted on Facebook. Now, all the women can put the booty pictures up there, and you can sit there and put up pictures of what you smoking a joint or, you know, with a 40 or something like that. That's cool. You know, white guys with a T-shirt on that says, put the white back in the White House, that's all good.
Yeah.
But if you put a picture up there of Malcolm X or Martin Luther King or something positive about Barack Obama or something, oh, now that's getting flag, that's a problem, that's inappropriate. So obviously this is not something that is beneficial to us. They want the coons, they want the Negroes, they want all the ignorant stuff on there, but they don't want anything that'll benefit black people and get them to wake up and say, hey, maybe we need to, you know, change our course, because this road we're going down is leading us to destruction. It's not leading us in a positive way. We're not going to get where Asians and Koreans and Jewish people are as far as being respected in society, as long as our women are showing off their body parts on Facebook and getting 1,000 or 10,000 likes. It's not going to happen.
You know, Salida, I just would like to say that to start doing this is here in Louisiana. I mean, all over the United States, especially in the deep South. We have coming together and coming back to our roots. If we don't start in and supporting each other, I was talking about this evening, and the same thing is happening, like to Mitchell with her case. We don't control anything. These white supremacists who are out here run these, and you don't know if they're wearing this hood or not, but the odds are they have the mentality as a clan that they are than anyone of any if we don't start doing,
you keep going in and out. Hold up, Brian. You keep going in and out. We're not hearing your
It's like a vibration or something, an echo.
Yeah.
Okay. If we don't, let me try switch phones. Is that any better?
See.
It's hard to tell.
Is that any better? Okay. If we don't start coming back and doing something for ourselves and our own, then we're going to be in trouble. The problem is that we as a people, we're in this crab mentality, and we don't want to see one do better than the other. We don't want to listen to our own. We listen to everybody but our own people. These people who are listening to us, I mean, these people who don't want to listen to us, they end up being having everything because we support them. It's so sad that we used to have our own hospitals, our own schools, our own banks, our own dentist offices, doctor offices. When they said, you have arrived, you have overcome, now you can come and integrate with us, we left our own to go be with them. And to be with them, our own businesses went out. We had our own baseball league. It's gone now. I mean, so if we can't see the destruction right here in our face, and we turn around and say, well, we've been treated bad, we did it to ourselves, but they set us up for the fall, and we went for the bait.
Exactly. You're right about that. You're so right about that. So we have to come to a point where are we going to continue in the direction we're going in, because believe it or not, they're coming to the point where they're the minority. And I think
that's starting to really get to them. That is why they're so hard on the ideal that they don't want President Obama back in office. And it's not a policy thing. It's more of a race thing. And there's no way this end is going to run this country for another 4 years. And we're going to do all we can to make sure that he doesn't run it. And that's what we're doing. I mean, that's what their whole goal is. They said that from the get-go, and that's exactly what they've been doing.
Well, Sister Salita, if I not to cut you off, I agree with what you're saying. We are at the precipice of extinction right now. You're talking about white people and their numbers. They are basically they are closer to extinction than we are. Their birth rate is damn near zero. Not only because they don't have their own children, but also because they mix with everybody else, and it's mainly a survival thing because their genetics are not strong enough to sustain them any longer. That's why they are trying to do different things, like they're trying to synthesize melanin to get darker so they can stay in the sun, because the sun is killing them, because they kill the ozone layer, so they can't stay out in the sun. I just saw an article on the news website out here in L.A. where they had a recall on Coppertone spray-on tanning oils, because if you get close to an open flame, it'll catch your white folks on fire. I said, I can't believe it. They can't be outside in the sun, and then when they put on some tanning oil to go out in the sun, they can catch on fire from that. I said, these people are in trouble, you know. But that's what's happening with them. So, like the brother said, we do need to get away from them. We need to self-segregate and build our own. We spend billions or trillions of dollars in this country. I think it was last year the Minister Farrakhan said we spent over $1 trillion in this country. Now, $1 trillion could get you built probably 500 schools, at least 5 different hospitals, a bunch of businesses. We can have our own community. And that's what I'm trying to do with my website. It's not only a website. We also have a national thing going where we're going to be building up a whole bunch of other stuff. It's not just going to be for that. I don't want it to be that. I don't want it to just be like a Facebook situation, a finite situation. And mine is working towards something different, because I want our people to actually have a community, you know, where we can go and have our own schools, because having the enemy teach your children is ridiculous, because all they're teaching them is white supremacy. My kids come home from school and say, "Oh, guess what, Daddy? Today is St. Patrick's Day. I'm Irish. Hey, Daddy, today is President's Day. I'm George Washington." I'm like, no. Now, you might be Abraham Lincoln. They say he was half black. So, but George Washington, you not. You know? So, I mean, you know, we have to teach our children. We can't let the enemy teach them, because they're only giving them half an education, if that.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And the fear of this whole climate now is fear. Everything is fear, 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 fear. If I can get them to be keep these people in fear of everything, then I'm in control, because I've already lost my footing. Like you said, with the birth rate, I'm not that minor. I'm not no longer the majority. I'm the minority. So I've almost got that crab in a barrel mentality too. Because I got to get at the top. These people can't get the best of us. Latinos can't get the best of us. Hispanics can't get the best of us. All these other nationalities, I'd be damned if I let them get the best of us. So we're going to do all the suppression we can in every avenue, in every policy, and everything that we can do, we're going to keep the suppression going on. And the black folks is the number one. For some reason, we feel we're the worst threat to them for some reason. We're the worst threat to them, and I think they've done us the worst out of all nationalities and all races.
I think so, too.
I think the reason why they are going after us is because of what they know they've done to us. But I always believe that the Bruce has to come home. He has to come home.
Oh, yeah.
And when he comes home, he's coming home hard. And I think we be prepared for whatever it is that he's bringing with him. We better be prepared for it. Because these people are no joke.
That's
I mean, if you look at the prison system, you look at Louisiana alone. The whole, we're number one now. We're number one in homicide against women. Why are you getting rid of the women?
Easy. You get rid of the women because then you can't reproduce. I mean, it's a double-edged sword they're doing. They're going after us with our women, with you, and they're going after the men to make them homosexual. So basically, you know, you want them gay, and you want the women not having kids. That's why Planned Parenthood is such a big thing. I mean, come on. The Planned Parenthood was promoting, what, the Essence Awards or something like that, or Essence Jazz Festival or whatever. I mean, these people are so ignorant, they allow that to happen. I mean, Planned Parenthood was started by a super racist. This woman not only idolized Hitler, but she also was having rallies at the Klan meetings. So, I mean, they've killed more black people, babies, than gang violence and the drug wars combined. I mean, they've done more than the Klan did. And slavery together. 14 million black babies have been killed by Planned Parenthood. This is supposed to be something good for people. And then we have people that are so ignorant, they use abortion as birth control. I mean, come on now. This is self genocide.
Well,
so we're getting killed all kind of ways.
I disagree with you on the Planned Parenthood. And I'll leave it like that.
And I'll say I disagree with you, Salida, on the Planned Parenthood. I'm right with you. Go ahead, brother.
I mean, it's not like I'm making this up. This is a fact. I mean, you can look it up. I mean, Planned Parenthood has killed millions of babies because of abortion. And the creator, Margaret Singer, was a known racist. Now you put those two together, and you see what the plan is. I mean, it's not hard to figure that out. But I mean, we can disagree. I mean, it's no problem. But I mean, it's just that is the reality of it.
It's my body, and that's all I got to say.
And
nobody
your body was given to you by God.
No. I'm not saying anything about anybody not having an abortion. All I'm saying is that the reason for Planned Parenthood was to get rid of black babies. That's what she set it up for. Now, what people use it for, that's on them. If you want to use it because you don't want to have a kid, that's fine. If you want to use it because you didn't want to have he didn't want to put a condom on and you got pregnant and you want to get rid of the baby, that's fine. If you got raped and of course you want to get rid of the baby, that's fine. Whatever your reasoning is, that's immaterial to what the whole purpose of it was for, just like the gas chamber. The gas chamber is supposed to be a way to kill people by the state, but Hitler set it up to kill Jews. Now, the back end story of it is something totally different than what they use it for now, but it doesn't change the fact of where the gas chamber came from. Same thing with Planned Parenthood. It was set up by a racist woman to kill black babies. Now people just go and run down there and do it on their own, so they don't even need to do it now. You don't even need to recruit people. They just run down there and do it. Now, what their reasons for, I don't know.
Because I think you make that's a plain analogy of what it's all about. We don't understand. We as black people just fall in line because we fall into and we're so gullible to people giving us reasons that if we don't have enough money, you shouldn't have a child. Well, you know what, folks? We'd be dead as a people right now if that was the case, because most of our people didn't have enough money to have a child, and we wouldn't be here today. So I think it does not make sense for us to take out a life. If that life is here, unless it's by rape, incest, or something, or the life of a mother, I don't think that we should take these lives out, that they'll let them be born.
Well, that's a whole other argument that we can go back and forth on that situation. But I mean, the bottom line is what it was used for, or what it was set up for, is my problem.
The history behind it, I understand that completely. But again, this is my body, and I'm not letting nobody tell me, put no laws down. Don't tell me, don't force me to do anything I do not want to do with something that belongs to me. You have yours, I got mine. You have your reasons, I have mine. I'm not disagreeing with nobody, but I'm saying what nobody's going to change or convince me any other way how I feel about who I am and my body. And all my sisters that fall in line with me and feel the way that I feel. My body is mine, period. And nobody has no jurisdiction over telling me my right to do this and my right to do that. I mean, telling me what my rights are. I don't need anybody to do that. That's just my opinion on that. We can move on to something different. And me and Brian has had this conversation before already.
I think we'll have it after the radio show, huh? you know,
okay.
I had to come in and take my pop shots, don't you?
You
know,
I know
you know that.
Yeah, you know, I let you, that's why I let you say what you said. But again.
But, you know, so, on a serious note, though, I think that, you know, just what we've been saying, if our people, you know, I was just talking to a friend of mine earlier this evening, and he was telling me that he needed to get some insurance on a home. Did I know anybody? I said, well, we're in two different cities. Go find somebody in your neighborhood, in your area. You know, I could get you somebody here, but it's easy in your area in case you have a claim. Well, yeah, I could do that. I think I know I got a white buddy of mine. I said, well, wait, don't they have some black insurance agents in your area? Well, I really don't want them in my business. Hold on a minute. You know, that's our problem today. We're so bent on that you're going to use that as an excuse to go do business with white people when you got your own people that sell insurance. That is so sad that we still have those stupid mentalities when all they're going to ask you is the square footage of your house and what type of material your house is made out of. Nobody's going to get in your business, but you don't even know it. So you, before even finding out, will go and take your money to someone who doesn't look like you to put food in that table, to send their children to school, to pay their car note when you could help your own. That's our problem as a people. We are crabs in a barrel, and we always want to do business with someone else, and then when they don't do business with us, we want to cry.
Well, it's the Willie Lynch syndrome, brother. That's the biggest thing. It's the Willie Lynch. It's perpetuated itself for 300 and some odd years. It's supposedly going to be coming to an end because I guess if he said this will perpetuate itself for about 400 years. It was done in, 1612 or something like that, and now it's supposed to be coming to an end. But it seems like it's gaining more steam almost. But it seems to be dying, but it seems to be still working itself around us. You know, that goes not only for insurance, that goes for black hair care and everything else. I mean, you can go to a black beauty care store and try to get some weave, or you can go to Mr. Lee. Mr. Lee love you because he's getting $500 and some million a year from black women. You know, we don't want to go give it to black people. We got to go give it to Mr. Lee. And then we got to go give Mr. Goldberg the money for a loan and everything else. We don't want to do anything or very little with black people, but then we complain when they piss us off. I sell cars and I see people come in and a black person will come and do business with somebody else, and then they tell them something that they didn't like. Oh man, I should have came looking for you. I'm like, get your ass away from me. Oops, excuse my language. But I'm like, get away from me, man. You know, you saw me standing here. You could have said, I want to talk to the brother. No, you want to go deal with somebody else. Then when they piss you off,
you know,
then you want to come looking for me. Go away.
But you got to understand, too. You got to understand, we have created that. We've created that ourselves toward each other. And you said something very cluey when you said, Brian, when you said you don't want them in your business. That's because you know why? I know your business. So guess what? I'm going to go yeah to somebody else instead of being on a business where you're not supposed to talk other people's business.
They do the same thing, though. They do the exact same thing. They come to me when I sell cars, and they do the same thing. These people, I've had lawyers sitting there while we finished up the deal. They waiting to go into finance. We sitting there talking. Yeah, well, I'm not supposed to say this, but you know, I had a client that said blah, blah, blah. You know, they sit there and just run their mouth, too.
Bang.
Everybody does the same exact thing.
Sick of people acting like we the only ones that do certain things. Everybody do normally the same thing. We're in the same crazy society.
Hey, Brian. Guess what?
They do it.
Guess what, guys? We ran out of time. This was a great conversation. I want to thank Ms. Connors. You guys.
Thank you.
Call in again. Oh, this is so awesome. We got to continue this talk. I really loved it. I got taught something different. I want to say thank you, guys. Have a safe weekend. And
thank
please,
you.
Please continue to listening to us, okay? And Ms. Connors, you know we're going to keep in contact with you, okay? You know that, right?
Right.
Salida, I'm going to tell everybody tomorrow, make sure they listen in to NOI.org. Minister's coming on at 10 o'clock Central Time.
Okay. All right. All right. Thanks. Bye-bye, you guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Join us every Saturday at 10 p.m. for more Say Your Peace Radio shows.